when you are doing the Proven Bread subscription, just eating the bread on its own isn't enough to change everything. What we look at with Proven is something we call lifestyle medicine. And lifestyle medicine isn't just one thing, it's a collection of many things. And what I'm really interested in isn't looking at our bread as a pill. I don't think food is medicine. I think that food is preventative healthcare. And, you know, you can cite all the studies in the world about how this vitamin does something and how this mineral does something else. But actually, the truth is that it's when we bring it all together and we live something that you have this magical thing that happens, which is empowerment. This is about understanding, and it's about you being empowered to eat your bread and connect to it in a way that puts you at the front of the day-to-day habits and the way that you eat bread. And that means that you're no longer a victim of your environment. You no longer have to go through a challenge when it comes to eating something, because your bread's on hand and it's your foundation. But most of all, I think it's really important to understand how it plays a role in your overall health. And so in this, I guess we're going to call it a podcast, what you're going to see and listen to are some of my students and some of the people who I've invited here as guests talking about bread, how it impacts them. And I'm going to talk to you about the self-assessment, which is downloadable this week. Start by sitting down with a cup of tea and actually taking a moment to ask yourself how you feel, both mentally and physically. And over the next 12 weeks, you will assess on a self-assessment how you respond to the bread. Now, there's also some warnings on here that if you start to score highly on any of the things and you find yourself in digestive discomfort, if you find yourself mentally challenged in a space where you're up in those scores that say there's a problem, please don't wait. Please go and find your medical professional or speak to somebody. And if you can't access a medical professional, then speak to someone, whoever's closest to you. But actually, it can be very challenging sometimes just by looking at your life. So have someone close on hand so that you can talk to them, because they don't want to find that you've ignored symptoms that actually indicate that there's something more going on. And that's why I ask you to go and talk to your medical professional. If you've got a dietitian, a nutritionist you work with, brilliant, show them this. If you've got a doctor, a nurse, someone around you, start with looking at your blood pressure, your weight, how you feel at the beginning, and then you can track your changes and see where you get to. And I think that's the most important thing, because what matters to me is actually how you feel. And sometimes it's important to know that if you feel worse, it's a great way of taking a written document to your medical professional to say, look, this is what's happened. It's tangible, and it gives someone something to work with at that level. And that is very useful. I put an alarm on my phone when I'm doing it because I forget. I like to do it, try and do it at the same time each week. And if you want to send me a copy, feel free. I'd be interested, but I hope that it will provide you with a record. And I hope you enjoy listening to this podcast. Nutritional psychiatry is very interested in this, and we just have to keep on hoping that people take notice of
what happens, and that will bring me around to this actually rather nicely. So the reason that I ask people to fill this in, it's a self-assessment, is because what happens for you will happen differently for you, will happen differently for you. Some people, they don't need anything. But when we get people to eat the bread, we ask them to follow a self-assessment over 3 months. We ask them to do it in conjunction with a healthcare professional, although not everyone's healthcare professional will do that. And what you do is you fill in your details and you choose the symptoms. So this is exactly what I used for my dietary intervention studies. Now, I don't need to prove to the whole wide world. I only need the person who I'm working with, or the person who's eating the bread and connecting, for them to understand. And I don't know if you want to have a little look over over David's shoulder at the form, but what you can see is it's personalised to them. And so you can see that as a fibre delivery system, as a slowdown, as an empowerment, as an understanding, as a blood sugar, your results can actually be tracked over the week and or weeks and months, your mood score. Now that allows you to see for you what happens. I'm not interested in a million people. The individual that needs more fibre, that needs better blood sugar, everybody, your better gut health impacts everyone. So it's also important if you're not improving, because you've got something tangible to take to your GP or your healthcare provider. How many times do we go to the doctor and we've got nothing to show to them and say, I can't tell you how long I've been feeling like this, but if you can take something like this, you've got a piece of paper, and often a doctor will take you much more seriously if you need more investigation. Many of the symptoms over the years of digestive discomfort can be something much worse. We've got ovarian cancer, we've got bowel cancer, we've got IBS, diverticulitis, Crohn's, colitis. We've got many, many diseases that mimic what people think of gluten intolerance or bread intolerance, and actually it's not. So by tracking your symptoms and talking to your healthcare provider first and then doing these as part of that, you've got a tangible, measurable symptom tracker that starts to build a picture. And most people, day to day, they can't even remember how long they've been feeling a certain way. You say, how long have they been? They're like, oh, I'm just not sure. Whereas this is tangible. And I love that tracking that we do with it.
Tim Williams, again, I know I mentioned him loads, but I was just hanging out with him. But he said that some people are actually allergic to glyphosate.
Yeah.
And it's the symptoms that can be very similar to gluten intolerance symptoms. So it's put onto gluten, but is actually a result of, the brain growing.
So quite often it's the gut that's leaking. And so then if the glyphosate is then being absorbed, then that is very easily crosses that blood-brain barrier, and that's why it makes people feel like shit. Mm.
Sorry.
Yeah, so, that's partly the reason. So it's not necessarily that they're allergic to it, it's just that they're absorbing it into their system much easier because they've got no protection in their gut lining. And then because it's a certain type of molecule that can then cross the blood-brain barrier very easily, or impact elsewhere in the body, but particularly that blood-brain barrier. So you have the same kind of gut barrier system around your brain as well, but you need the nutrition from the gut to build the brain barrier. And most people, if they're very low in zinc, have a very poor blood-brain barrier. So a lot of toxins that are then circulating around the body, even toxins that are being absorbed from the gut. So if you have, let's say microbes, your microbial imbalance is poor, or you've got a higher level of certain microbes that are not necessarily beneficial, go in that bracket, they all produce, they all eat and poo, all of these microbes. So whatever their byproducts they're pooing out can be very toxic.
We call them endotoxins, and they actually can weaken your barrier. And Joe's absolutely correct. It's and the other thing is, it's not one onslaught. you have an onslaught from multiple directions, and historically most people have had antibiotics. I'm not going to say that they shouldn't, but if you don't have to, you shouldn't. Most people are taking anti-inflammatory drugs when they've got a headache, so ibuprofen, another onslaught. You've got, when you eat rubbish all the time, you're creating an expansion in the population of your microbes in your gut that produce those endotoxins. When you're denying fibre to your gut, you are weakening the mucosa layer, allowing these chemicals. You've got, often I was in a bakery just down the road, I picked up in the last few weeks 14, 15 products, all with carboxyl methyl cellulose on, which is an emulsifier, which we've had studies stop because the harm against the mucosa layer. So we know that it's not just glyphosate, this is again where we start looking at Pan-UK. We're finding multiple chemicals through imported grain into the UK that are banned in the UK. But we can't test what's being imported. So again, we look at British farmers, and we need to look after our British farmers because they're within the protective legislation as much as we can here. And it's a combination of a chemical, you know, when you look at if you really want to start looking at it and get worry yourself, you've got fungicides, you've got herbicides, you've got pesticides, all the sides are in there. And even on your fruit and vegetables, many of those chemicals that we've got were actually originally developed as nerve agents during the war. And they were taken to America and reproduced as often pesticides, and they are in our food system. And that combination, that perfect storm, it creates that kind of like problem. But for me, your absolute ground level start point, and which is comes back to this, is your 30 grams of fibre, is your minimum level of fibre a day, and only about 10% of the population are reaching that. So if only 10% are reaching that, a fibre delivery system like this is your start point for lowering inflammation, for intestinal integrity, but also, interestingly, for drugs like SSRIs to start working. Because if you look at serotonin reuptake inhibitors, which is commonly what we would look at for someone with a depression, then if you don't have the fibre in the first place and you don't have the balance of the microbes in the first place, and you have problems such as, for example, candida, which is a thrush, which often women will have if it's an overgrowth, that will munch through your serotonin. And so imbalances in the gut will actually... they will take what you need to function because they're quite greedy and they're like, oh, we'll have this first. And then the serotonin reuptake inhibitors, antidepressants, won't work, not because they don't work, but because you don't have the fiber in your diet to make the serotonin to support your microbes. And if you had a better diet, the doctors and the psychiatrists have got some of the drugs that have got the evidence of helping us, but one drug will help one person, it won't help another. And that level of fibre alone is key to this. Another brilliant example of our immune system and our regulatory system being balanced or not is that I have students here who will come who are oncologists who will tell me that they can look at someone's gut and actually determine whether or not they will survive the immunotherapy for their cancer treatment based just solely on their gut microbiome. And that again is the ability of the gut to take that fibre and transform it into short-chain fatty acids. So even though glyphosate is, I believe, one of the most horrendous enemies of our nourishment. I think it's an anti-nourishment. I think it's a dreadful thing. I think that that we are in a position where 90% of the population aren't getting enough fibre, and they're not even in a position to avoid the glyphosate. We don't have a food system that can avoid glyphosate, a glyphosate-free, if I can, and that at least gives them the integrity of their gut barrier, mucosal layer, to stand some of that onslaught, because we can't get away from it. It's everywhere. And that, to me, is social justice. So it's a microbial social justice. And I believe, I brought it forward in my doctorate, was I believe in what we call microbial equality. I think I'm the first person to ever talk about microbial equality as a basic human right. I understand that microbial equality stands for microbial equality of soil, microbial equality within the transformation of our food, and the microbial equality of our guts in order to function as humans. And I believe that when it comes to basic human rights, I would have human rights rewritten to include microbial equality at the foundation level of what it means to be equal. I think we've been stripped of our microbial equality, and that's where we're having our trouble. And that's another whole theory that has come out of the doctorate that I've published, and I've put it online as well, because if we don't begin with microbial equality and feeding those microbes, we don't stand a scooby. Literally, it's like saying my car won't start, it's got no petrol in it. Your body won't operate properly, you don't have enough fibre in it. That's it. So yeah, I totally agree with you, David. I think we can shout and yell and get very upset about everything that's wrong with the food system, but the first point I can do, my most powerful point, is to get 30 grams of fibre in someone every day. Diversity, broken down fibre, and that brings a level playing field to every person on the planet. There's your equality. Every child, every elderly person, every mother, every single person, I believe, has the right to be able to eat that. You walk into your supermarket and try and get 30 grams of fibre into yourself in a day, it's almost impossible. There just simply is not the level of unless you turn into a seed munching crazy, then you can't get it, because it's been removed from our diet, and the only fibre that is available has been covered in glyphosate, which is why regenerative farming is so key to, I'd love it to be organic, I haven't been able to get that far yet, I say yet, I would love it, but we have to practice regenerative farming, glyphosate-free seeds, glyphosate-free grain is absolutely integral to delivering that fibre, because the very fibre is supporting the gut should not be covered in an endocrine disrupting agrochemical that is known to be carcinogenic. It's absolutely insane.
The commodity grains that go through mills now as well, they're gassed with phosphine gas, aren't they?
So I don't know about that, you'll have to tell me more because I don't know.
So if the grain comes in and it's organic or regenerative, they can use carbon dioxide as a way of mitigating against any pests, essentially sanitising the grain. But if it's commodity grain, they use phosphine gas, which again is a gas that was used in chemical warfare. And that's going directly onto the fibrous part of the grain.
Just makes you cry, doesn't it? You've got children and you want them eating that? I don't think so.
And I know that because I went to the mill and I saw the certify the so they were going through all the paperwork and they were like trying to flick past it, and I saw the
you're like me, you have a little look over there.
Yeah and I was like phosphine gas. It's like, yeah, that's what we use for the commodity grain. I was like, is that common? They're like, yeah, that's used in everything.
It's heartbreaking, isn't it? It's just routine that we just cover the food. So if you roll back to food systems, right, and you pull right back to where I'm at, I want to know the farmer. Why? Because that farmer is going to look me in the eye and I'm going to buy him. That grain I just used, Henry. I don't hang out with Henry. I take him food. He's someone I know. I can look him in the eye and I feed my family what he grows. The second you remove accountability, you remove responsibility, and commodity, nobody cares. When you're in a food system like where I grew up in the Dordogne, the farmer's children are at school with his children, with the children from each farm. You hang out with your neighbours. There is no way that you can poison your neighbours with gas and chemicals, because they're munching next to you and your food is their food. That's why small food systems are so important to look after. We have to. It's part of the way of thinking about and protecting. And right now, we are under threat. Like, I've never seen anything like this. I've never felt so chilled in all my life as to the threat to our food system that we have in the currently. And so bread is a way of standing up to that and saying, enough. Enough. There's my line. This is my boundary. We can't do it with everything, but bread is a really great place to begin with. You know.
So in the mills that you're talking about, is this every mill, or is it just the huge commercial mills that spray this?
It accounts for the vast majority of the flour that goes into the food systems. Like, you will have, if you've consumed flour which is non-organic, unless it's... The thing is, if you're a small mill, you tend to mill organic or regenerative grain because it makes more sense, because you're already creating a specialist product. Whereas obviously if you're using commodity grain, it's more likely to go through one of the bigger mills. If it's anything over, I think the limit is it 500 tonnes?
Yeah.
So if you mill anything over 500 tonnes, you become liable for all of the things, like if you're producing white flour, you have to fortify it and all the rest of it.
Yeah, so that's why I take everyone over to Henry for the white flour, and why I only use regeneratively farmed. It's why the relationship with Hodmer Dodds and what Nick and Josiah have put together is so remarkable. Don't think I do this on my own. I don't. And part of a movement of people that includes, I mean, you're here. You. You are, I'm just one connector. And this is the thing. We have to acknowledge that we are part of a greater group of activists, aren't we, David?
Yeah, I think it's quite an interesting thing as well about all food systems. The sort of more nutritious and usually higher quality the food, the more focus the people put on each other as humans rather than on the actual product. I think when you become product focused, I think that's when you start making shortcuts. When you're sort of person focused, like you said, there's that level of accountability that you can't get away from. Yeah. So I think when you think of the grain as Henry's grain.
Oh yeah.
and you think of the bread as Vanessa's bread.
Yeah.
That's a massive shift. Because by tying something to your reputation, by tying it to your legacy, the stakes just went up.
Yeah, you're eating my bread.
You can't hide behind a marketing slogan.
No, and you're eating my values, and you are here and you're eating the knowledge, and you're eating everything that means something to me. It is the values that I have are in here. And that is dangerous, because you are asking people to bring their values to the table. That's proper activism. You're asking them to look at the economic system, the social system, social justice. You're asking people to think. You're asking people to link, to connect, to communicate, to bring kindness. That's dangerous, because you are not just going to accept the status quo of being made to be ill and being a cash cow for the system. It's an act of defiance. It's delicious defiance. That's what I think is so wonderful about it. I think it's just a fabulously delicious act of defiance to stand up. It's probably the single most powerful thing that you can do to keep your health and your family is actually to cook and to bake and to connect your food.
That should be your strap line for the bread. Delicious defiance.